Chapter 4. Time ticking away. That's what I was conscious of. This was some kind of a trial or a test, and it was going to take me at least 10 precious hours to complete it. 10 hours that I didn't have to spare. And the truck was a pig to drive. It was old and balky, and there was a constant roaring from the engine and a screaming whine from the transmission. The suspension was soft and worn out, and the whole vehicle floated and wallowed. But the rearview mirrors were big, solid, rectangular things bolted to the doors, and they gave me a pretty good view of anything more than 10 yards behind me. I was on I-95, heading south, and it was quiet. I was pretty sure nobody was tailing me. Pretty sure, but not completely certain. I slowed as much as I dared, and squirmed around and put my left foot on the gas pedal and ducked down and pulled off my right shoe. Juggled it up into my lap and extracted the email device one-handed. I held it tight against the rim of the steering wheel and drove and typed all at the same time. Urgent, meet me first I-95 rest area, southbound, south of Kennebunk, exit. Now, immediately, bring soldering iron and lead solder, Radio Shack or hardware store. Then I hit send now and dropped the thing on the seat beside me, kicked my foot back into the shoe and got it back on the pedal and straightened up in the seat. Checked the mirrors again. Nothing there. So I did some math. Kennebunk to New London was a distance of maybe 200 miles, maybe a little more. 4 hours at 50 miles an hour. 2 hours, 50 minutes at 70. And 70 was probably the best I was going to get out of that particular truck. So I would have a maximum margin of 1 hour and 10 minutes to do whatever I decided I needed to. I drove on. I kept it at a steady 50 in the right lane. Everybody passed me. Nobody stayed behind me. I had no tail. I wasn't sure if that was good or bad. The alternative might be worse. I passed the Kennebunk exit after 29 minutes, saw a rest area sign a mile later. It promised food and gas and restrooms 7 miles ahead. The 7 miles took me 8.5 minutes. Then there was a shallow ramp that swooped right and rose up a slope through a thicket of trees. The view wasn't good. The leaves were small and new, but there were so many of them that I couldn't see much. The rest area itself was invisible to me. I let the truck coast and crested the rise and drove down into a perfectly standard interstate facility. It was just a wide road with diagonal parking slots on both sides and a small huddle of low brick buildings on the right. Beyond the buildings was a gas station. There were maybe a dozen cars parked close to the bathrooms. One of them was Susan Duffy's Taurus. It was last in line on the left. She was standing next to it with Elliot at her side. I drove slowly past her and made a wait gesture with my hand and parked 4 slots beyond her. I switched off the engine and sat gratefully in the sudden silence for a moment. I put the email device back in my heel and laced my shoe. Then I tried to look like a normal person. I stretched my arms and opened the door and slid out and stumped around for a moment, like a guy easing his cramped legs and relishing the fresh forest air. I turned a couple of complete circles and scanned the whole area, and then stood still and kept my eyes on the ramp. Nobody came up it. I could hear light traffic out on the highway. It was close by and fairly loud, but the way it was all behind the trees made me feel private and isolated. I counted off 72 seconds, which represents a mile at 50 miles an hour. Nobody came up the ramp, and nobody follows at a distance of more than a mile. So I ran straight over to where Duffy and Elliot were waiting for me. He was in casual clothes and looked a little uneasy in them. She was in worn jeans and the same battered leather jacket I had seen before. She looked spectacular in them. Neither of them wasted any time on greetings, which I guess I was happy about. "Where are you headed?" Elliot asked. "New London, Connecticut." "What's in the truck?"
"I don't know."
"No tail?"
Duffy said, like a statement, not a question.
"Might be electronic," I said.
"Where would it be?"
"In the back, if they've got any sense. Did you get the soldering iron?"
"Not yet. It's on its way. Why do we need it?"
"There's a lead seal," I said. "We need to be able to remake it."
She glanced at the ramp, anxious. "Hard thing to get a hold of at short notice." "Let's check the parts we can get to," Elliot said.
while we're waiting.
We jogged back to the blue truck. I got down on the ground and took a look at the underside. It was all caked in ancient gray mud and streaked with leaking oil and fluid.
It won't be here, I said. They'd need a chisel to get close to the metal.
Elliot found it inside the cab about 15 seconds after he started looking. It was stuck to the foam on the bottom of the passenger seat with a little dot of hook and loop fastener. It was a tiny, bare metal can, a little bigger than a quarter and about half an inch thick. It trailed a thin 8-inch wire that was presumably the transmitting antenna. Elliot closed the whole thing into his fist and backed out of the cab fast and stared at the mouth of the ramp.
What?
Duffy asked.
This is weird. Thing like this has a hearing aid battery, nothing more. Low power, short range. Can't be picked up beyond about 2 miles. So where's the guy tracking it?
The mouth of the ramp was empty. I had been the last guy up it. We stood there with our eyes watering in the cold wind, staring at nothing. Traffic hissed by behind the trees, but nothing came up the ramp.
How long have you been here now?
Elliot asked. About 4 minutes, maybe 5.
Makes no sense. That puts the guy maybe 4 or 5 miles behind you, and he can't hear this thing from 4 or 5 miles.
Maybe there's no guy. Maybe they trust me.
So I put this thing in there.
Maybe they didn't. Maybe it's been in there for years. Maybe they forgot all about it.
Too many maybes, he said.
Duffy spun right and stared at the trees.
They could have stopped on the highway shoulder. You know, exactly level with where we are now.
Elliot and I spun to our right and stared, too.
It made good sense.
It was no kind of clever surveillance technique to pull into a rest stop and park right next to your target.
Let's take a look, I said.
There was a narrow strip of neat grass, and then an equally narrow area where the highway people had tamed the edge of the woods with planted shrubs and bark chips. Then there were just trees. The highway had mown them down to the east, and the rest area had leveled them to the west, but in between was a 40-foot thicket that could have been growing there since the dawn of time. It was hard work getting through it. There were vines and scratchy brambles and low branches, but it was April. Getting through in July or August might have been impossible. We stopped just before the trees petered out into lower growth. Beyond that was the flat, grassy highway shoulder. We eased forward as far as we dared and craned left and right. There was nobody parked there. The shoulder was clear as far as we could see in both directions. Traffic was very light. Whole 5-second intervals went by with no vehicles in view at all. Elliot shrugged like he didn't understand it, and we turned around and forced our way back.